so we are holding on Pei Gimel Amud Aleph, line 5 from the top. Okay, we discussed yesterday, the Mishnah had said that the person is carrying a barrel from one place to another and it breaks. Now, the barrel in those days were made out of earthenware, they were very fragile. We said whether you're a Shem Chinam or a Shem Sacha, you swear that you were Peshea and then you're Potter. And we said, and the Mishnah of Elazar said that, yes, I agree, that's what we learned from our Rebbe, but I can't understand how that's possible. And we typed out in the Gemara, we had three opinions. We had Rebbe Meir, who is the Tana of our Mishnah. We had Rebbe Yehuda, who says that a Shem Chinam swears, as he usually would, a Shem Sacha pays, as he usually would, like a Veda. And we had Rebbe Elazar saying that I don't understand how it's possible to equate Shem Chinam and Shem Sacha. So we got into the discussion, according to Rebbe Meir, do we say that Nitkal Peshea, that the very fact that you tripped and broke the barrel, does that in and of itself constitute Pshia? So that's where we left off. We left off with, we said Rebbe Elazar had said that yes, there may be two opinions within what Rebbe Meir holds. That
one says
based on a Mishnah in Bava Kamma that we learned the case where you dropped your barrel and then clean up the pieces afterwards, where we said that Rebbe Meir said Yechayev because there he holds Nitkal Peshea, whereas in our Mishnah, evidently he would hold that Nitkal was not Peshea, and therefore you're Shem Chinam, you're able to swear and be Potter. And then we had Rebbe Elazar saying, I don't understand, first of all, Shem Asacha, why is he only swearing? Why shouldn't he have to pay if it was an Aveda? And even a Shem Chinam, why aren't there circumstances where he should have to pay, either if there are Edim available or if it was on a slope, etc. Okay, so that's where we're up to. Okay, so now we have another explanation. So far, the whole sugya that we had up until this point was assuming that the shvur that we're talking about in our Mishnah is the regular shvur sashomim, the regular shvur that a shomer takes to say that he wasn't peshea or whatever. Now we're going to have a different opinion. No, this shvur that we're talking about in our Mishnah is actually only a takana of the chachamim. It's not the shvur midaraisa. This is the shvur, this is a takana that the chachamim made that you'll be potter with this shvur, even in a case where ordinarily you should have to pay. See, he had to omer kain, and the reason for that takana was, if you weren't going to say that, if you were going to make him pay for breaking the barrel, then you would never find anybody would never nobody would ever be willing to carry a barrel from one place to another because it's so easy that you could trip. And so now, so Rashi learns over here that the point is we're saying that. Even if we say the Gemara is going to discuss over here that on the face of it, if we're saying Nitkal Peshea, then he is a Peshea. But we're saying that nevertheless the Shavua patters him. That's the Gemara is going to revisit that in a minute.
A Peshea cannot be.
Well, a Peshea usually you have to pay. That's that.
No, yeah, right. Yeah.
So we're saying, in other words, that in this case, the Chachamim said, even though it is to a certain extent a Peshea, we will still allow you to swear. But then otherwise nobody's going to carry barrels for anybody else. The problem with that is, Heichem Mishtaba. In that case, the question is, what kind of Shavua are you doing? In other words, as we assumed up until now, the point was that just because he tripped, he's not a Peshea, fine, he swears he wasn't Peshea. Here, if you're saying that we're going to assume that Nitkal is Peshea, at least according to the mayor, but we're saying that nevertheless we're exempting you by swearing, what are you swearing about? You're swearing that you weren't Peshea? The very fact that you tripped, ipso facto, means you were Peshea. Tosfos learns it slightly differently, that if before we were saying that, okay, you swear you didn't do anything different than normal, but now we're saying that even you did everything exactly the way you were supposed to, and we're saying that you're still a Peshea, but the Takana Chachamim is going to exempt you. So then in that case, then even if you did do something different, then what are you swearing about? Mela, in other words, before we assumed that, fine, you're swearing you didn't carry the barrel any differently than normal. But if now we're saying the Chachamim are making a takana to pater you, then that means regardless whether you carried it the normal way or not, then what are you swearing about? Okay, so Rava says in that case, what you're swearing is I didn't break it deliberately. That's still, there's different levels within Pshia itself.
There can be Pshia
where sort of an inadvertent Pshia, like tripping, and then there can be a deliberate thing like deliberately breaking. It's amazing, yeah. Mind you, there are Rishonim who learn differently. There are Rishonim who learn that this Takana, that we're going to patter him with a Shavua, Taka does not apply to Pshia. We'll see at the end of the parak with the story that we'll have over there. We'll see some discussion about that.
So then, are we going to?
No. So then, the point is the same idea. In other words, so according to that, the idea is that the initial assumption is just because you trip does not make you a fesheah. But the question is, nevertheless, then, so what are you swearing on exactly? And the answer is that I wasn't Peshea, that I didn't break it deliberately, but if you did, or you were Peshea in any other way, then yeah, you would have to pay. But also Rabbi Yehuda Lemeimar, so now then comes Rabbi Yehuda, who argues on that, and he says, no, I don't agree with Rabbi Meir that Nitkal Peshea. I say Nitkal is not Peshea, therefore it's more like an onus. It's closer to an onus, but in that case, it's like Neva Vaveda. So therefore, Shemachinim Yishava Nesasacha Yishalim. So therefore, I don't agree that there's this Takana Chachamim. We just go the way it usually goes with Gnei Vaveda. Shemachinim goes according to his usual din. He just swears in his potter. Shemachinim goes according to his usual din and pays for as he would in any case of Gnei Vaveda. But also Rabbi Lazar Lemeimer, and then comes along Rabbi Lazar and says, Ein Gemara Kerameir, it is true. I learned from my Rebbeim that this is how, that what exactly like what Rameir says, that indeed both of them are potter with a Shemur.
Meaning,
yes, I agree that when a mayor says that both the Shem Achinim and the Shem Asachar swear and they're potter on that basis, fine, I agree. That's how I learned from my Rebbeim also. I don't understand it, though. I don't understand how you can say that both of them swear and are potter. Name. And again, before we mention this, we talked about this yesterday in connection with the first version of the Gemara, according to the first explanation in the Gemara, Rabbi Lazar's explanation, that it was a question, that basically the question boiled down to whether Nitkal Peshea or not. Now we're revisiting that in the light of what Rabbi Chiya Abba is saying, that this is that we're not talking about a Shavur D'Oraisa, we're talking about a Shavur D'Rabbanon, because otherwise nobody's going to want to carry barrels. So then in that case, the point is, in other words, that according to this way of looking at it, then the Shavua is again, let's go with Rashi's chat that we're talking about over here, that even if you were Peshea, we're going to allow you to swear, which is you're swearing that you didn't break it deliberately. Fine. Then in that case, that means the Shavua is a kula even on the Shemachina. So therefore, so actually, he says like this: Bishlem Shemachinam Mishtaba Shalei Poshava. Fine, I can understand. Okay, Shemachinam would swear that he wasn't Peshea, and that's that. El Shemasachar Amay Mishtaba. But why, according to this way of looking at it, this is the same way we had yesterday also. Why is Shemasachar swearing on it? First of all, Kilei Pasha Nami Bari Shalomi. So what are you swearing? I wasn't Peshea and I didn't break it deliberately. Okay, and if he wasn't Peshea, so he still has to pay for it. It's still like Aveda, and Hashem Asacha pays for Aveda. Sure. In other words, that's the thing. Rashi learns, at least somewhere on the surface, the surface meaning of Rashi is that Rabbi Lazar agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that there was no such Takanas Chachamim. This Takanas Chachamim that Rabbi Chiya Ba'aba is saying that we'll let him get away with the Shavua, because otherwise nobody's going to want to carry barrels, he says, I don't agree with that.
There was never any such
Takana. So therefore, the question is, why is the Shem Achinam swearing? Why is the Shem Asachar swearing? What is he swearing about that he wasn't Peshea? So he still has to pay for Aveda. The Ritva has a problem with that because, okay, so he said, so he holds there was no Takana. So what's his problem? Rabbi Meir held there is a Takana. Fine. So he learns differently that he's
got a different opinion.
The Ritva learns the question differently, that the question is that even with the Takana, you're still not potter if you're Peshea. So therefore, what is he swearing that he wasn't Peshea? Kilei Pasha Nami Bari Shalomi, and if he wasn't Peshea, he'd still have to pay because he's a regular Shem Asachar, and a Shem Asachar have to pay. V'afil Shem Achinam Nami, Hatenach B'makom Midrin, and even a Shem Achinam. Fine, I can understand if it was on a slope where it's a little more onus. Shalom B'makom Midrin Mimatzim Mishtaba Shalei Pasha, but if it's not on a slope, how is he able to swear that he wasn't Peshea? V'afil B'makom Midrin Nami, and even if it's on a slope, Hatenach Hecha D'lekha Raya, I can understand when there's no proof. That if there's no proof, if there's no edim available, then okay, he can get away with a shavua. But if there's a raya, he should have to bring a raya in order to be potter. He can't just get away with a shavua. The Tanya Isi ben Yehuda, as we learned yesterday, that Isi ben Yehuda says when the potter says ein roya shavua Hashem tia ben shneihem, that nobody saw it, and then there has to be a shavua between them. Implying, but if there is somebody who saw it, then you have to bring that raya, and then you'll be potter.
So therefore, he's saying, I don't understand how you can just say as a blanket statement that he can get away with a shavuot. This that we're saying, by the
because,
way.
Because
yeah.
you need edim if they are there.
Because, yeah. This, by the way, that we're saying, what Issi ben Yehuda says, that you have to bring edim, there is further a machlokus we're showing him on this. What does this mean? Are we trying to be machmir on him? That if there are going to be edim in the area, you have to bring edim, and if not, and if you cannot bring those edim, then we cannot potter you with a shavua. Or maybe is it to be makel on him, that instead of making you swear a shavua, if you have edim, then you don't need the shavua at all. You could still argue. You should still maybe have to swear that you weren't Peshea, etc. Okay. Now some cases in this connection. A person was once carrying a barrel of wine in the marketplace in one of the main streets of Mechuza. The Tavra Beziza de Mechuza, and he broke it by accidentally banging it against a ziz, which is something that sticks out from the wall into Rosh Hashanah, an overhang or a porch, whatever. A ziz is a general term in shas for anything that sticks out of a wall, a ledge, a beam, whatever. Yeah. So he broke it against that. Also, like I made Rava. So he comes to Rava for a din Torah. Amalei ristika de mechuzah shchicha ba'ichi. Well, let's look. The ristika, the main street of mechuzah, people are always there. Zil aizirai of ichtar. So fine, go bring a raya, go bring edim, and you'll be potter. Again, it goes back to the same thing. Are we saying that if you can't bring edim, you're going to be chayev, or is it if you have edim that you weren't pesheya, then you'll be potter? Omle Rav Yosef Bre Keman Kisi. Who is that like? You're saying like Isi that you have to bring the edim. Omle Ein. So he says yes. Kisi. Well, Sviru Lan Kavasei. And you should know, even though Isi is a Das Yachid, we do in fact hold like what he says.
Maybe it's been a Muslim.
No, because then we would say so. No.
Why do we say who's a
son? No, because that's where the story happened. The point is that we do hold La Halacha like Issi ben Yehuda. Again, you have to bring the Edim according to the two ways of looking at it. Either bringing Edim is a Chumrah, we're not going to let you get away with a Shavua, you're going to have to bring them. Or Fakir to the Kula, as long as there are Edim that you weren't Peshea, then you'll be Potter without a Shavua.
Right.
Yeah, either way, we hold like that, yeah.
And we don't know what...
Well, it's a machlokas that we're showing him. It's a machlokas we're showing him what the meaning of Izzy's statement is. But yeah, okay. Another case. Havu gavra d'omale l'chavre zil zaden li'aba mea doni chamra. A person once says to somebody else, the reason we're bringing this story in, this has nothing to do with carrying barrels of wine, but it's a similar kind of thing where we see that if there's a proof, you're expected to bring the proof. So a person tells somebody else, go buy for me 400 barrels of wine. All those other ways, so he went and bought him 400 barrels. L'soif, also l'kameh. Eventually, the shliach comes back. He says, Omalei zvini loch abameh dani chamra. I bought you the 400 barrels of wine. However, utkipa lehu. But they became sour. They turned into vinegar. What do we do? The question is basically, is he, no, because like the sale was a sale. I mean,
the sale was wine.
No,
the
point is, rather, you have to ask like this. You can ask, did he legitimately buy wine which turned into vinegar? Fine, then maybe yes, maybe you can go back to the seller and demand a refund. Or maybe the other way around. Maybe the guy, Lachatchila, Rashi says, maybe we have to suspect that this shliach decided to pocket something on the side over here. He went and took the money. He bought 400 barrels of vinegar, figuring that then I'll pocket the difference between the value of vinegar and the value of wine. And yeah. So the case came to Rava.
That would be real Shia.
Yeah, well, Shia, they love it, yeah. Yeah. Amalei, so Rava tells him like, Avameh Dani Chamrat Kifi, when you have 400 barrels of wine that go sour, Kola Isla Lamilsa. There is a coil of when and where it happens. And the Raivad spells out what kind of coil in the sense of, if somebody has unexpected, well, coil in the sense, the usual kind of coil. What we mean is, though, the Raivad says, what it means is like this, if you have somebody had a huge wine cellar and all of a sudden a huge amount of his wine went sour, he would be putting out a coil. He would be screaming out in the street, "Ugh, what happened to me?" etc. So people would know about it.
400 barrels of wine, that's
mm-hmm.
a lot.
It is a lot, yeah. Therefore, zil aisi raya de me'ikr ki mizabnas lo chamra mal yahava. Therefore, you have to go bring a raya that at the time you bought it was good wine. the iftar, and then you will be potter. And then, yeah, maybe your mashalayach can go take up things with the owner, because maybe it was starting to turn, whatever. But at least if you have to prove that there was no such coil, basically. That was wine, that when you bought it, you legitimately bought it as wine. That you didn't
meaning
go.
There was no coil.
Meaning there was no coil from the original owner, that it had turned sour, right? And also, also, I mean, the other idea is, again, based on what the David says, if in fact you bought it as wine, and then on the way you discovered it turned to vinegar, you would have been putting out a coil. So there's that to consider also, yeah. Okay. Amalei of Yosef Rei. Never mind what I just said. No, because the fast just we assume the shliach didn't know it was vinegar until he brought it back. But the point is, the Ravid learns that way. That he's gonna be my dear Sire of Rabbi.
400 barrels.
Yeah, he's gonna be.
No. Secondly, if you bring 400 barrels of wine. And there's vinegar, you smell the vinegar.
Okay.
No question about that.
All right. Okay, whatever. So you have to bring some kind of rye. Omelet, and Omelet Rav Yosef Rei. So again, Rav Yosef, Rava's son, asks him, Kaman, can you see who are you going like? You see that you're saying you have to bring a raya, and he can't just give a shura. Omelet, ain't can you see your spirit on Kabase? Again, he says yes, like Issi, and the point is that we hold like it. The reason why we have to mention two cases is because one was talking about a shomer and the other was not. The first case was talking about you're carrying a barrel, you're a shomer chinam, shomer sachar, as the case may be, as we learned in our Mishnah. The second case, when he sent the guy to buy wine, the guy's not necessarily a shomer, there's not necessarily a shomer on it, he's a shliach.
Yeah.
There's a different kind of thing. So the point is that nevertheless.
But I mean, this is a special case. Who says, in this case, there are 400 barrels at stake. In a case where there's one barrel.
No, but the point still remains that Issi's point is, based on the passage, whenever you're able to bring a raya, you're expected to bring that raya.
Did you say there was no people there?
So that's the thing. If there's no, that's the thing. What Rava was mentioning in the previous case,
then you cannot.
That's going to believe
it,
right?
What? No. So for example, Rustica de Bahosa, yeah, there's inevitably going to be people there in the main
but
street.
You said there are no people who don't believe it.
Lachor or not, but I'll tell you, there is, just before you came, we were talking about the machlokas between Rashi and the Rif and various other Rishonim on both sides of it. When we say, according to Issi ben Yehuda, Yavi Raya v'yiftar, is that meant lachumra on him, you have to bring a Raya, and if not, then we're not going to let you get away with a Shavua? Or is it lachula, once you bring Edim, that you weren't Kashaya, then we don't need anything else from you? But that probably affects this also, because if he claims nobody was there in the street, according to Rashi, it wouldn't work. Well, we can't that itself you'd need a raya for that there weren't people in the street. That Rambam also holds that way. As opposed to going through it, it would be a kula that if there are Edim, then yeah, you bring the Edim, you don't need anything else. If there are no Edim available, then we'll allow you to fall back to it.
If you were in a case like that, 400 barrels, there had to be agents. It's impossible otherwise.
Well, that's what Robert is saying, that color is, right? That usually, whoever it is, at some point, these barrels obviously started out as wine. So whoever they spoiled by, there's going to be a coil. Especially like the guy that says, that person is going to go scream out.
Right.
So therefore, you have to bring a diet when that happened. Did it happen before you bought them? Did it happen?
No, it's not a chumra. It's a chula, in a way.
Well, okay, but yeah.
But I'm saying this. The fact that it's 400, it's a kula, but if it was one or two, then it would be a chumra. So it depends.
I don't know. Maybe. Okay. I'm not really seeing it. You also have to, I mean, to go back to what you were saying a minute ago, that you would inevitably smell the vinegar smell. I mean, these were earthenware barrels, and they were sealed shut. So not necessarily would anything.
Earthenware.
Yeah. Remember, we're not talking about earthenware barrels.
How do we
know? We don't know whether it's a toilet or not. He has to. He has to bring a raya based on the coil. Yeah. If he can't, then he has to pay. Yeah.
How do you know they
were? That's the barrels in those days were made out of earthenware. That's a known thing.
Not
that.
Wooden barrels.
Not wooden barrels. No.
Okay, so that's okay.
They're pretty big barrels. I don't know. I mean, they had all different sizes. Yeah. You go into any museum, you'll see earthenware containers of all different sizes.
Day, like
no, maybe. I don't know. Okay. All right.
They had
porous
at the time.
Yeah, okay, well, they were all different sizes.
Barrels, I don't know.
Okay, whatever.
Amud. Asking Rav Chiya bar Yosef for Sichra. Rav Chiya bar Yosef made a takana in Sichra, which is the name of the city he lived in, as follows. Hani didoru ba'agra. If you have people who are carrying a barrel on an agra, so an agra, Rashi describes as it's a stick that's bent in the middle. It goes like that, basically. You put it on your shoulders, and you carry sort of like the old time water carriers. You use it to carry a heavy load on. Yeah, like a yoke, basically. So if you're carrying a barrel on such a thing, on an agra, the itbar, and it breaks, nishalim talga, then you have to pay half of the damage. My timer, nafish l'chad v'zutu l'tre. Such a burden is too much for one person, so in a way it's pshia, he shouldn't have carried on his own. On the other hand, it's too little for two people. It's not the kind of thing you would usually bother to have two people carry.
So you must only buy one, I mean. Yeah, so what size of it?
So maybe it's not like the old water carriers, but it's the kind of thing that the Venois now say for no, what are you put it on your shoulder. Venois is Shnei Badin Mishnei Rosh, it's a stick that's bent in the middle. Venois now say for you put it on your shoulder. Venois is Shnei Badin Mishnei Rosh, you have two sticks on the two ends. Venois is Masa Kavod, and you, I guess what it is probably you have, like, it goes like this, kind of. You have two things on the end, and then, like, you suspend the barrel from it and tie it on with ropes from both ends.
You
can't
take one.
Yeah, no, you would take one. No. So that's what I'm saying. You tie it with ropes coming down to the middle, like. I picture it basically something like this. Let's say. So there's the agra. So now you take a rope from here and a rope from here and tie the barrel to it. So you're walking. So it's one barrel, yeah. But that's the point. In other words, it's too much. Something like that is too much for one person to carry normally. No, that's what I thought, but I guess not. Because we're talking about one barrel. But it's too little for
either
two
way,
people.
This is too much.
Much more. Well, wait. The point is, it's too little for two people to carry. So what happens, therefore, Rashi says, so therefore, something like that, you can expect that a person, so in that sense then, you can expect people will usually try, fine, I'll do the extra little bit. It's true, usually it would be too heavy for me to carry, but I'll exert myself, I'll try. So therefore, you can't call it a total onus, but you can't call it total pshia either. Therefore, he pays half. The Rambam has a different understanding of it. Let's finish the words. Kodav onus for kodav l'pshia. Therefore, it's halfway between onus and pshia, and therefore we split the difference and make you pay half. The Rambam understands differently. We're talking about that this is something where two people are carrying this agra. So then the point is, still the same kind of thing. There's pshia, and there's a bit of pshia and a bit of onus involved. In fact, the Ravid comments on the Rambam over there that on the Facebook there's more pshia if it was a lighter load, because then what are they doing tripping? Anyway, the point is that therefore the idea is that, again, since it's more than one person can carry by themselves, but less than two people could, so in a sense, it's halfway between pshia and onus. The very fact that it broke itself indicates a certain pshia, because if it's a load light enough for two of them to carry, what are they doing
tripping?
The usual rule would apply, yeah. If there's adim available, then you have to bring it. If it was in a street where there's adim, yeah. B'digla mishalim kula. However, if the person was carrying the barrel with a digla, which means, Rashi describes it as it's a forked stick. It's a one long stick with a fork on the end of it. So you put your head between the two tines of the fork. You have the resting on your shoulders. And you have then the back of the handle of the fork is sticking out behind you, and you carry the burden. Rashi says,
and it puts the long stick in the front.
I don't know, Rashi. Maybe. Okay, could be.
On the floor.
Could be.
Okay,
could be.
No, Rashi says.
He puts his head between the two tines of the fork, right? But Mutalav is clear. He doesn't say clearly whether the part that sticks out is in front of mine. Okay, I don't know. Maybe. All right.
No, he does.
Okay. 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 Fine. When he wants to rest, not figure the cow, he puts it down on the ground. Okay, could be. Anyway, if you're carrying a barrel using a digla and it breaks, mishalim kula, then you have to pay for the whole thing, because that's pshia, because that's the kind of thing, that's not something that one person can normally carry on their own. That's something you expect two people to carry, and therefore it's pshia.
One barrel,
Vashta, but still. It depends how you carry it. In other words, with an agra, it's something which conceivably one person could carry.
Is a lateral
beam?
Well, no, because it actually learns that it goes on your shoulder, so it's still in front and behind you, but you have the thing hanging from the side next to you, as opposed to an Agra where it's hanging, as opposed to a Diggler where it's hanging before or in back of you. That's too much for a person.
A Diggler is this way.
Yeah, this way or this way. Yeah.
And an Agra.
Seems like it's this way, sort of. Yeah, like along your shoulder.
Yeah. Along the shoulder, and a Diggler?
A Diggler, we're saying, goes either in front of you, like Vincian is saying, or behind you, like I'm saying, yeah. Okay. Anyway, the point is that then you would have to pay the whole thing, because then that was carelessness to try and carry it.
How would you, if it's in front of you, how would you carry it?
With difficulty, that's why we're saying that. Okay. There are, by the way, Rishonim who explain that what broke over here is not the barrel per se, I mean, the barrel eventually breaks, but rather it's actually the stick that broke. It's a carrying stick that broke, which led to the barrel breaking. So then it makes a difference what kind of stick it was. Yeah.
Okay. That's the lever.
It's too heavy for the stick.
Too heavy for the stick, that's
the
thing.
The lever made it.
All right, new, let's go on. Another case. Rabba Baba Chana, it says on the side over here, Tavra Lehanu Shkuloi Chavisa de Chabra. One time, some porters broke a barrel of wine of his. He had hired some porters to carry a barrel of wine. They carried it, and they broke it. So Rashi learns that it has to be that there was some kind of shia over here. Either that either it was on flat ground and they broke it, which we established before was considered shia, because why should they have tripped? Or they were carrying it with a digla or whatever it is. So they broke it for shia. Shokal liglimaihu. So he took their coats to pay for the damage, basically. It's a different mafoshim talk about. Aside from what Rashi is saying over here, that there was Shia, there are other Mepharshim who learn it wasn't necessarily so much a matter of Shia, it was he may have disagreed with Issi ben Yehuda's position, he may have agreed with Issi ben Yehuda's position over here, that look, if there's Edim available, then you have to bring the Edim. Here it was in the street, there should have been Edim available, what are you coming and claiming that you should be able to get away with a Shavua? No. Okay. Also Omer Lulav, yes. So also Amar Rav, the porters came and told Rav, Amar Lei have little glimayu. And Rav says to Rav Baba Chanan, give them back their coats. Amar Lei dina achi. Is that the din? Either they were pesheya or there should be edim, as the case may be. Why should I have to give them back? Amar Lei ain. So Rav tells him yes. As the pasuk says, Laman yes, meaning that you have to do this. Laman telach b'derech tovim. Because as the pasuk says in Mishle, in order that you should go in the way of good people, meaning with nimishur hadin. There is actually an interesting discussion, again, based on the two possibilities, why Rabbi Baba Chana felt that he's entitled to compensation. Was it that there was Pshia, or was it that there could have been Edim? That makes a difference as far as what Rab is telling him. Is he telling him that it's true in, I agree that they were Pshia, and they shouldn't be able to get away with it. However, you need to act with Nimishur of the Din. Or is it that Rav is telling him that you're arguing like Issi, but not necessarily. Not necessarily. Is the halacha like Issi? Before we said Rava says the halacha is like Issi. Doesn't mean Rav has to agree with that. So therefore, it can be that he's telling him that the halacha is not necessarily like Issi.
To bring
Edim. That you have to bring Edim. As long as there's valid reason to say that there was no Shia, they should be able to get away with a Shavua. So according to that, it could be though that he's also telling him, don't even make them swear a Shavua, right. Because Laman Taylor Fader of Turgim.
As we were saying previously,
yeah.
It could be either a Fumra or a Kula.
Yohiv Lahu Glimahu. Okay, so Rabbi Baba Chanan gave them back their coats. Omrule, then they said to him, Aniye Anan, we're poor, but Tachin and Kula Yoima, we worked hard all day, the Kafinan, and now we're hungry, the less one midi, we don't have anything. Omrule, so Rav says to Rabbi Baba Chanan, Zil Haba Grahu, go pay their salary. So again, he asked him, is that the din? Mela, I have to give them back their coats. Okay, but actually I have to pay them. So he says, yes, as the pasuk continues, v'orchus tzaddikim tishmer, and keep the ways of tzaddikim. Which actually, Marshall explains, Rashi makes a point of mentioning this is the end of the same pasuk. So Marshall explains what the point of that is. If there were two different psukim, then Rabba Bachanan could argue both of them are telling us the same thing. You have to act with Nimashur Sadin when I should have gotten paid, so I have to give them back their coats. There's nothing more than that. The fact that it's two halves of the same process means the second half has to be teaching us to go beyond even the first half. Not only be the Laman Tales for their employment and don't take their coats, but even go beyond that and be a tzaddik and pay them even though you suffered a loss. And there are the based on this that yes, for someone who is a Talmud Chacham and can afford it, which is those things were the case with Rabbi Baba Chanan, then these kinds of things, that don't listen to Mishnah Sadin, becomes an obligation on him. Mishnah says, Hasecher is a poelim. If somebody hires workers, and the kind of workers we're talking about over here are workers by the hour or by the day or whatever, not kablonim, like we were talking about previously, where you pay them by the job. And he tells them that he wants them to come earlier than normal or stay later than normal. If it's makom shenagur shel lahashkim or shel laharim, if it's the kind of place where the minhag is that they don't have to come early and they don't have to leave late, and rashoy lekoyf, and then he's not allowed to force them to do that. Which means Tosfos says, now the Gemara will eventually discuss the details of that, but Tosfos explains the point is, if he made a t'nai to begin with, sure, you can make whatever t'nai you want. But if he just hired them without specifying anything, and after hiring them, he tells them, I want you to come early or stay late, then he doesn't have the ability to do that unless Minhag HaMedina is to do that. Yeah. Continue the Mishnah. Mokam Shenagu Lazun, in a place where the Minhag is that the employer provide meals for the workers, Yazun, then he has to give them meals, unless otherwise specified. If the minhag is that not only he gives them bread, but also he gives them misika, sweet stuff, meaning like stuff to go together with the bread, cream cheese or whatever, yisapik, then he has to supply that. Hakol k'minhag hamedina, everything goes according to the minhag hamedina. Ma'aseh b'Rav Yochanan ben Maaseh. It happened once with Rav Yochanan ben Maaseh. Sh'amar livnei tzei tz'chor lo nechol. And he says to his son, go hire us some workers. So the son went and hired workers, and he arranged with them that we're going to give you meals. Then when the son comes back to Rabbi Yechon, and he says to him, you should know something. Even if you were to arrange for them the kind of meal that Shlomo HaMelech did during Beshaita, during his good times, during the time when he was a king, because you know the famous thing, we learned in Gittin, that there was a period of time when he was kicked out from the kingdom. But when he was a king, the Pasuk describes in Melachim, we'll talk, we'll learn about it in a couple of days, he had these tremendously large meals.
What happened when he was kicked out?
Then we have the whole story of Ashmedai over there in Gittin. You remember that said there was the ring and the shea. Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
How long was he?
Whatever, how long, I don't know. But whatever, he was for some period of time. We actually had a machlokas over there. Did he ever become a king again to the full extent of before? Anyway, whatever. The point is, the shaita, I mean, in his time, in his good times, he made these tremendous suddas. Nevertheless, even if you were to give these workers kesuddas shlomo b'shaita, lo yatzasa yidei chevas chayman, you still will not accomplish everything you need to do for them, shehem b'nei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, because they're the children of Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, and Avraham made a greater party, a greater meal for his guests, the Malachim, than Shlomo did for his court, as we will see in the Gemara later on, how that's possible. So therefore, no matter how much you give to them, it won't be enough. So the Bnei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov. I saw, by the way, an interesting thing. The Chidah has an interesting word on we say, Hey Lach Ma'anya, at the beginning of the Haggadah. What's the Indian of it? He says, based on this Mishnah over here, you're inviting Jews as guests. Told the Chinyei to be able. So we're saying, and then you're telling you're going to give them Lacham O'ini. How you talking? What happened to Bnei Avraham to Yaakov? We're saying, we have no choice. Hey, Lacham Anya, we're doing it to be Achalo of a son of Arab Israel. We're doing it to commemorate what our fathers ate in Eretz Mitzrayim. Not because we don't want to treat you the way royally as you should be treated. Because if not, you don't have to give them to the
Agada comes to you.
Yeah. Okay.
Then they do this.
Anyway, Ella, so Rav Yochanan continues to his son, what you have to do is like this. Actually, before these guys actually start the work, Seva Emelahem, go back and tell them, that I'm hiring you at your work on condition. The keys should be over there. On condition that all I'm responsible for is to give you bread and beans. And that way, specified ahead of time, then that way that's all we're responsible for. Rav Shimon Gamliel says you wouldn't even have needed to say that because I call him minhag hamedina. You just go according to the local minhag, and the local minhag is just bread and beans, and that's all they can expect. So we'll see later on in the Gemara, at the bottom of Pei Vav, we'll talk a little bit. We'll have between the two major sections of Agadah, we'll have a little bit of Halacha Gemara discussing the ins and outs of this part of the mission. So the Gemara starts off Pshita. Isn't it obvious that if you tell the workers to come early or stay late, and it's the minhag HaMakom not to, why should they have to? Now, what do you mean? You can't force them as if we would think otherwise you could. The answer is, loitzricha d'tafelu agrai. The chiddush of the Mishnah is, what if he paid them extra? Mar d'tema, you would think, amalahu, that he should have the ability to say it to them. Hoda t'failahu agraihu, the reason why I gave you extra, more than the usual amount that workers like you are paid. I figured it's almanas that you will come early and stay late with me. Kamash Malon, that is the chiddush, that nevertheless, he doesn't have the ability to say that, right? And to force them to come earlier, to stay late. The Amrulay, because they can tell him, hi, the top of one. No, we can figure the reason why you gave us extra money. Adaita, the Abdin Lachavita Shapirta, will be almanas that will do better than average quality work. But not necessarily that we're obligated to come earlier or stay late. Amr Shlosh. Poyo b'knisase mishaloi. When a worker comes in, that's of his own. B'tziyose mishabalabai. His going out is from the balabai. So what does that mean? Rashi says like this. K'nisase n'itziyose refers to relative to him coming, relative to the city where he lives. K'nisase means coming home. So, and mishaloi means he has to give away some of his time. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, v'knisasa, when you're coming back to the city, mishaloi, you have to, like this, you want to be home by tesa kachavim. However, you have to give up some of your time in favor of the balabas. You have to work until tesa kachavim, until it gets dark, and then you can start going home. Or b'tziyase, but when you're going out to work in the morning, mishal balabayas, then that comes out of the balabayas' time, even though in theory you should have to be there. Alois HaShachar, but you are entitled to actually only show up there at Nesachama. The time from the time that it takes to get to work is on the balabas. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos discusses it a little bit, and among other things, brings Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation that the other way around. B'knisase means when you come to the job, when you come to the job site, mishaloi, you have to give up some of your own time to the balabas and leave before Nesachama. You have to leave at Alois HaShachar to be there by Nesachama. U'bitziyosei, and when it comes to leaving, mishal balabayas, that you are entitled to take off some of the balabayas' time and get home by Tzeitzei Kachovim, because otherwise you should have had to work till Tzeitzei Kachovim.
What would be your problem to work until Tzeitzei Kachovim?
According to Rashi's explanation, you do have to do that. You have to work till Tzeitzei Kachovim, and then b'knisasev is mishaloi on your own time after Tzeitzei Kachovim. According to Rabbeinu Hananel, it's the other way around. That you are entitled to knock off work sometime before Tzeitzei Kachovim, enough time to get home before Tzeitzei Kachovim.
Why? That's my question.
Why? Because.
I understand Rashi, but why?
The Gemara is going to explain. The Gemara is going to say over here because the pasuk says Adei Arev, and Rabbeinu Hananel understands that to mean you want to be home by Erev. You want to be home by Eve, by Tzeitzei Kachovim.
Rashi would say
that it means ad order, aday order, literally means until nightfall, you have to be on the job site. Yeah.
There was an issue with the light, there was no electric lighting. So if you would work in the field,
so you take a torch, I don't know. I mean, according to Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation, yeah, that way you're home by Tzeitzei Kachovim. According to Rashi's explanation, okay, so you take a torch. You take a candle, whatever. Yeah. There is one of the Rishonim explains that the reason behind Rashi's explanation that you should only have to show up to the job site at Nesachama rather than at Alois HaShachar is to give you time to daven.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Not the second, but the other. You're allowed to daven for the Shachar. Okay. Shenem. The pasuk says, Tizrach Hashemesh Yeosefun. When the sun rises, then they are gathered in, meaning that the animals, the nocturnal animals, the wild animals and whatever, go in to sleep. Velmo Noisim Yerbatsun, and they rest in their hiding places, in their holes or whatever, the animals. And at that point, Yetzir Adam Masalai, at that point, man goes out to his work, to his labor, Vlavidos Ade Arev, and to his work, Ade Arev. So we see from that, in other words, that when the sun rises is when Yetzir Adam Masalai, that a person goes out to his work, so therefore, in other words, he has to be there at Nesachama, Vlavidos Ade Arev, and he works until Ade Arev, meaning until it gets dark.
When does he daven?
So Shachrit he davened beforehand, that's the point. Mincha he davened on the job site, fine. Mincha is short. And Ma'ariv, he would daven after he gets home.
So according to this day, you could daven Shachrit when you go to work before next.
It's not the ideal thing to do. Ideally, you should daven after next. But if you're a day worker where you're supposed to be on the job site at Nesachama, yeah. And according to Rabbi Nachmanel's explanation, you would say Faket. I guess you would say, since you have to leave your house at Aloysia Shachar, you'll have to daven Shachar on the job. Yeah. That's an end bracha. It's true. There are halachas over there about that you're allowed to lay in Kriyashma when you're on top of a tree or on a building site or whatever, but you're going to ask you can't. You have to stand on the ground. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, right, there are dinim in that one. That's what we're talking about. According to Rabbi Hananel's explanation, it would come out, you left your house at Aloy Tashacha. At some point, before, after, next, whatever it is, you are going to Shema, you can say, while you're working up on the tree, or the wall, or whatever, Shema Nasri, you'll have to go down. And there's other halachas in Brachas, the Gemara talks about, for example, that if you're working on a job site, even if you have a minion, you don't do Chazor Tashach, you don't do all the other things, because stuff goes up. The time of the Balabas is important. Obviously, again, but nevertheless, you... Fine, but... The Avishal left because it's important to do an honest day's job. You know, two weeks ago, the parasha, we had Yaakov explaining to Laban how hard he worked and how, you know, he never wasted a moment. That's the Rambam writes that we learn from that. That's how a person has to be on the job. Every moment of the job time is important. Okay. Okay, the question is, what do we need Rish Lakish to be telling us when you're supposed to leave and when you're supposed to come and when you're supposed to come home? Whatever the minigam makam is, that's what it is. The answer is the Il Chadosha. But we're talking about a newly settled city, so it doesn't have a minigam makam yet. Okay, but next in the Hechakal, fine, let's see where the people who came to the city, where are they originally from? And we'll go according to the minhag ha-makom, where they came from. All that, like nowadays, you know, each kehillah follows the minhag of the town they came from in Europe, you know. The answer is Bidkutoy. We're talking about a city that's made up of people who came from all kinds of different places. So therefore, there's no specific minhag ha-makom to follow because each person comes from a different place.
Like New York,
yeah. Someplace I read, for example, that in the mid-1800s, when Jews were starting to come in numbers to America, there came a point, there was some town in Ohio where they wanted to build a shul over there and start a minyan, but they couldn't agree on it because the people came from four different places and nobody could agree what nusach to follow, so they didn't end up building one. They didn't end up putting them. But yeah, it was that. Anyway. Or another possibility, the Amalahu, that what's the case Rish Lakish has to tell us, what the din is, when they start and when they end, is suppose the owner tells them, I want you to be hired out to me according to the din of the Torah. So then we have to figure out what is the din of the Torah. If they're specifically making up according to the din of the Torah, that'll override Minig HaMakom. We have to know what the din of the Torah is. That's what Rish Lakish is talking about. Now we're going to have some Agata. Now we're gonna have pretty much continuous agadta from here for the next 2.5-3 blocks.
But the previous halakhus, you could daven on the Balabos's time. I mean, Balabos is paying actually for you, say the Shema.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a certain amount for it you have to daven, but again, you're supposed to do it as fast as possible.
Right,
or
but he is paying.
But
if
it, yeah, he, but again. I mean, nowadays it's an accepted thing. For example, that you're at work, that you'll take 15 minutes off for mincha and do chazor shas and all. And the same thing with lunch. You know, there's a din technically that the poyulim who are working by the balabas in certain cases they bench the entire first bracha. They combine the second and third brachas together in a shorter version, and they don't say the fourth bracha. But nowadays, it's a generally accepted thing that people allow time for full benching, and therefore you bench full benching. Okay. Darish Rav Zera. Ba'amri lo toni Rav Yosef. Rav Zera darshan as follows, or some say Rav Yosef Torah Breit as follows. My dichtiv, what does it mean? We're going to quote in this connection the pasuk that we just quoted, Tizra Hashem Mashiach Seifu, in Rish Lakish's statement. We're going to darshan that and the surrounding stuff. The pasuk says like this, Toshes choshech vihi loyla, you make it dark, and you make it dark, and it becomes night. Boitumus kochayse yar. In at that time, all of the wild animals of the forest roam around. So toshes choshet vihi laila. Now, when it starts off, you make it dark, and it becomes night. So the point is, Marshall says, what's the point of it? Of course, we know that choshet early in Parshas Bereishis. By yikra lekim la'oyo, but choshet kar alayla. What it means is. It means it's referring to Olam Hazeh, which is like the night, because we don't see things clearly. We don't see other course clearly. We don't see what things really are clearly. And the pasuk continues, all the wild animals roam around during that time. This refers to the Rishayim in the world, who are like wild animals in the forest. They do whatever they want. Nobody's after them. Well, okay. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, in Olam Hazeh, the Eibishter gives them the opportunity to do their rishus and doesn't necessarily punish them right away. However, Tizra Hashemesh Yosef, when the pasuk continues, the sun rises, they've gathered in, and in their lairs, in their dwelling places, they crouch, they rest. Meaning, Tizra Hashemesh LaTzadikim, there comes a point when the sun shines for the Tzadikim, when the Eibishter brings out the sun, the light of all the course in the world. Yosef and Rishoyim LaGehenim, then the Rishoyim are gathered into Gehenim. And when the pasuk continues that, they rest in their dwellings. What does that mean? Every tzaddik in Gan Eden, there's not a single tzaddik who doesn't have a resting place, who doesn't have a dwelling place according to his covered, according to what's appropriate for him, according to what he accomplished in Olam Haba. The point is, me'oinoisam is sort of a double plural. It means in their resting places. So we see that each one has his own resting. Then the pasuk continues, Yetze Adam Lefalo, man goes out to his work, meaning Yotze Tzadikim Lekabel Sparim, the Tzadikim come out, primarily in Olam Haba, but I mean in La'asu Lavo, also in Mashiach times, yes. The Tzadikim come out to receive the reward, V'la'ave Dose Ade Arev, and to their work until evening, meaning the Mishi Hishlam Ave Dose Ade Arev, but this is the reward for those who continued in their Avoida Ade Arev until the evening, meaning until the evening of their life, their entire life. Their entire life they continued in Avodah. Or there's also the idea that Adei Orev also means Arevus, Russian sweetness, that they made things, they
sweet.
Arev is sweet, delectable, yeah, so like they, yes. Yeah. So they did mitzvahs which are delightful and delectable for the Eibishter, and they as it says in Tanya, that they turned Merudal Miska, they took the bitterness of Olam Hazeh and turned it into the sweetness of Kedusha. So now the Gemara is going to tell a story in which the beginning of the story we're going to quote one of these psukim that we just mentioned, and go on from there. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, this is the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, one time met a certain par hagoina, Rashi says, Mamuna Shomela, somebody who was appointed by the king, so like a police detective. This is after the Meir of Masha. The Katopis Ganvi, this guy was catching thieves. He was investigating to find who are the thieves and catching them and then handing them over for punishment. Amalei, so Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon tells him, how are you able to figure out who are the real ganavim or not, who are the real criminals? Lav kechevas amitzmisili, aren't the rishoyim, these thieves and whatever, or the criminals, aren't they like wild animals who hide out during the day? The pasuk that we just quoted, that in the darkness, all of the wild animals roam around, so they're in the darkness, so how do you really know? Or some say that he mentioned him a different pasuk. The pasuk says Yerev v'mitzir ka'aryeh b'sukai, that the Rasha lies in wait in secret like a lion in his bushes. Meaning again, like they hide out. They're not to ambush yet. So he says Dilma shaklas tzadikim shaklas rishoyim. Yes. So he says, Dilma Shaklas Tadiki Vishabskas Ushoi. Now how do you know? You're getting the right people. You might be arresting the wrong suspect. You're arresting and then you're arresting the Tadikim and you're leaving the Rishayim because it's a darkness, yeah, because they do their things in darkness. It's very hard to tell who's the real gun owner. Amalei, so the guy answers, my Evid, so what am I supposed to do? How many Demalko? The king ordered me to do it, I gotta do my job. Amalei, Omar, what?
He has a quota.
Omar, so Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon tells him, it's fine, let me teach you what the right way to go about this is. What you should do is go into a store, meaning like a tavern, an inn, whatever, a restaurant, go in there at, what? A cafe, yeah. Go in there in the fourth hour of the day, which is the normal time when people eat breakfast. between 9 and 10 in the morning, yeah. On a regular six to six day, yeah.
What?
On a day when the sun rises at 6 and then sets at 6, and yeah, we'd be between, it's, you know, we're talking the fourth show of time, presumably.
Not these days.
Yeah. I don't know if you see a person who's drinking wine, he's holding the cup in his hand and he's drowsing, he's like half asleep. Show a little bit. Start asking about what he does. What does he do on a daily basis? Well, if you find out that he's a young Talmud Chacham and you see now that he's sleepy in the morning, fine, the reason must be Akdumi Kodim Lagirse. He got up much earlier in order to learn, and so now by 10 o'clock in the morning he's feeling drowsy. Which in fact, by the way, there's a Gemara in Sotheim and a couple of other places that says that usually Talmud Chachamim would eat during the sixth hour of the day. So what are we talking about, the fourth hour of the day? So one explanation is when we say the sixth hour, we mean the sixth hour from when they got up. But like this, if they get up earlier, even before the hours count from Netzachama, if they get up a couple of hours before that to start learning, then by now the fourth hour for everybody else is already their sixth hour, yeah. Well, whatever. Okay. I mean, there is another explanation also that they might eat a light snack during the fourth hour like everybody else does. They'd have their main meal of the morning in the sixth hour. The Alfred Ever points out in Tanya
12.
Between 11 and 12. The Alfred Ever points out in Tanya was a matter of iskafia. It was a matter of that they're not going to be controlled by their stomachs, that they, you know, they're not going to eat at the same time everybody else does. They'll control themselves and learn for 2 hours extra before they sit down to a full breakfast. Okay, so if he's a Talmud Chacham, then no problem. That's why he's tired in the morning. Ipoilu, and if he's a worker, kodim ka'avid avidei. Fine, you can assume he was up early. If he's somebody who's hired out by the day, fine, he was up early to do work. And again, by 10 o'clock in the morning, he's feeling tired. Iavidtibalelia, and even if you find out that it's somebody who usually works at night, he usually sleeps during the day. What's he doing here in the cafe at 10 in the morning anyway? Fine. Radudi Radid. You have reason to assume he might well be somebody who works at night, but what his work is making metal wires. Which Rashi describes it. You take the metal and you put it through screens with smaller and smaller holes. That's how they made needles and other such small things in those days. That kind of thing is something that's done quietly. So if you find out that he works at night, you're going to say, if he works at night, why don't we hear banging or whatever in his house? Lachoda, that means at night he's probably up planning theft. Lavdafka, he can be somebody who makes wires or needles or whatever for a living, and therefore that's done its quiet work, and therefore there's no reason to suspect the fact that he's tired in the morning. V'iloi, but if none of the above, ganvahu. Then you know he's a ganav by elimination. So that's why he's awake. That's why he's tired in the morning, because during the night he's awake. Either he's awake stealing or ambushing people or tunneling into houses or whatever. Vitaspe, and grab him, or not actually. Ben Yoyota says doesn't mean that's not enough evidence, but at least at that point you should start investigating more closely and find out in other words, the point is then at least you have what to investigate and see whether he really is a ganav, and if so, then arrest.
So you have to ask him.
Not ask him, but you ask around, whatever, you ask people who know. Okay. Ishtama milsa be'malka. So this whole story, this whole statement that what Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon said eventually was heard by the king. Omru, and they said, the famous expression, kraina de'igata iula hevet rabanka, the one who reads the letter should be the messenger, meaning if Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon himself has such good ideas of how to catch the thieves, let's appoint him. After you a little blood of Shimon Kashab is Gandhi. Krain is the Igata, the one who reads the letter, Lehevi Yu Pravanka. That one should be the messenger to actually accomplish it. So after you a little blood of Shimon, so they brought Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon and appointed him, but Kashab is Gandhi, and now he's going and arresting the Ganav. Sholach le Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, so Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha sends him a message. Chaymet ben Yayin, vinegar son of wine, meaning a Rosha, the son of a Tzadi. You're the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Yechoi, the great Tzadi, and you are, by comparison to him, a Rosh. Ad Mosa, Ad Mosa, Amosha, Alakenu, Lahariga. How long are you going to be taking and giving over people of Hashem's people, Jews, because these Ganovim included Jews as well, to be killed? You're mastering them to the government. How are you talking? Shalach Le. So Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon answers him back. Kotzimani Mechalim and Akerim. I'm removing the thorns from the vineyard. In other words, these are Rishoyim anyway. They need to be gotten rid of. And actually, Marshall says a nuance in it. You're telling me I'm Chaymet Ben Yayin. What makes grapes go bad so that the wine of them turns into vinegar when there are thorns near them? Well, I'm getting rid of the thorns. I'm making it so there'll be more Yayin and less Chaymet. Shalach Lei, however, Rabbi Shoban Toche sends back to him a message, no. Let the Eibishter who owns the vineyard come and get rid of his government. It's not your business to be mastering Jews to the government. And
is it the Roman government?
Yeah, the Roman government, yeah, of course. Yeah. We're talking 100 or so years after the Korban. Yeah. So let the Eibishter deal with them. It's not your business to. Now, the halacha, of course, is, we know, you're not allowed to master a yid to the government. So what factor was Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon thinking over here? So the Ritva learns that on the basis of dina de machlokes dina, if the government decides that certain things are crimes and they need to be punished accordingly, then yes, a yid is able to master them, especially
if the government is
It's a legitimate government. The Roman government was a legitimate government, as we've talked about many times. A legitimate government is one where you use their coinage. The Jews of Eretz Yisrael used the Roman coinage at the time, so they accepted, whether they liked it or not, they accepted that they're in Golos Adam, that the Romans are legitimate government.
From learning Torah.
That was years before. By now, it's a time when the Romans are not preventing them from doing any mitzvahs. This is after the Churban, after the whole war of Bar Kochba, after the Shema, that is long after all that.
So they're not doing anything, so there's
a legitimate government. If they say that certain things are crimes and need to be dealt with by the government, then yes, you can be involved in that, especially if they're a danger to the rabbi, as thieves and whatnot are. So there is quite a bit of discussion. There is actually quite a bit of discussion about this among the Achronim about some other cases. For example, Shevet Halevi has an interesting discussion in one of his Truvas about, if you work for the IRS, too bad Yaakov's not here,
yeah.
If you work for the IRS and you're looking over things and you find that a yid is cheating on his taxes, are you allowed to inform the IRS? And he says it's not a job for a good Jewish boy, he says basically, but if you have the job, the Shevet Halevi, one of the Achronim of the previous generation. He says basically it's not a job for a nice Jewish boy, but if you have the job, then yes, like Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says over here, yeah, you're responsible to do what you're responsible to do.
What about if you're a prosecutor?
Because it's only
momentous. Well, in that case, it's only momentous. No, because for example, the IRS can put somebody in jail also, yeah.
What about if you're a prosecutor?
Lahora, I guess it would be. So there is quite a bit of discussion. There is quite a bit of discussion about the ins and outs of this, and does it apply?
Yes.
So it depends. It depends who you ask, really. There is quite a bit about it. It's talking not so simple. Anyway, onward. Yom Echad Poga Be'ahu Koymus. One day, a certain laundryman meets up with Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. And he also uses the same expression that Rabbi Shoban Korcha said to you, vinegar the son of wine. The difference is Rabbi Shoban Korcha is a Talmid Chacham, he has a right to Talmid, he may have even been Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's Rebbe, whatever, he's from a previous generation, whatever it is, he has the right to do it. This Koyvis, Sama Yoko on the street, has no business doing that. Omar, so Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says, since this guy is such a chutzman ya, shmamin Rashil, that means he must be a Rosh. Amalahu tifsu, tifsuhu. So he calls out to the police that are working for him, arrest him. He's obviously somebody who's in his chayav. Levosa de nosnagde, wait, after he calmed down, also basri lefaruki, he went to try and get him freed, stuff, I didn't have any solid evidence against him. Well, I must be, and he wasn't able to. Kari alay, so he referred on him the pasuk, shoma pivol shona, shoma mitzaris nafshi, somebody who guards his mouth and his tongue, saves himself from many tzaris. Meaning, Rashi says, he's talking about the laundryman. If he had kept his mouth shut, he wouldn't be in trouble now. Marshall says, actually, he's talking about himself. I should have kept my mouth shut and not told them to arrest him. Zakfu. So in the end, they hanged this guy. Come to this gift of a kabachi. And Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon is standing there under the gallows and crying. Amrulay, they said to him, the pashtus people who were around there, however, it's interesting, the Bach, has a girsa that it was actually Omerlay. The laundryman Kovis himself tells him as he's hanging over there, because the Bach explains, hanging doesn't mean they hang the guy by the neck, then he'd be dead. It means they hanged him by the arms, or they crucified him, or whatever, he's still alive. So according to the Bach, he himself speaks to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon and tells him, Rebbe al yera beinecha, don't be so worried about it. The guy is Taka Rosha. Shahu uvnoi balu nara meirosa b'yemek kapurim. He and his son both had relations with a Naira HaMayrasa on Yom Kippur. A tremendously serious Avera. So what happened? Rashi says then, to be a person who is Mizana with a Naira HaMayrasa gets skila, the rule is, we'll learn in Sanhedrin, colon is skull and nitlin, everybody who gets skila afterwards gets hanged. Therefore, when the guy got hanged over here, then it's an appropriate punishment for him. Tosfos elsewhere talks about a different thing. We say it was him and his son. The point is, suppose his son is the one who was mezanin with her first, then at the point when the father does it, she's no longer a psula. Then it gets downgraded to chenet. Well, getting hanged, if we learn that he was hanged by the neck, not like the back, then that's similar to chenet. So therefore, he got the appropriate punishment in that case.
It's his job to do it.
The point is, in other words, that the point is that we see the guy tackle with a rasha, but wait, that's what we're going to continue with the story, but wait. There is one other thing I think Bar Shah says. The point of mentioning him and his son is Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon should have had to be concerned. L'chora, when a person is arrested and killed by the government, they also confiscate all his property. What about L'chora? Okay, he was a Rasha. What about his son? Shouldn't his children may have been tzaddikim? Shouldn't they be able to inherit it, as we looked at the end of Bava Kamma? The answer is no. We see the son was a Rasha too. So therefore, he realized that it all worked out. At that point, Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon put his hand on his stomach, Omar, and he said, "Sisu bnei me'ai sisu, be happy, my kishkis, be happy." Madach, even when you had a suffix about somebody whether he's a rasha or not, and it turns out that it was exactly the right thing, that he really was and he deserved this punishment. How much more so all the certain cases, like the cases before about the guy who was sleeping in the cafe, where there's a strong reason, once we've eliminated everything else, to say that he's a ganav, then how much more so that I must have been doing the right thing all along? And he continues, I am certain that no worms or maggots will have any control over you. Meaning, when a person dies, usually the first thing that starts decaying and getting eaten by worms or whatever is his kishkis. Like this, he's saying, I'm certain that's not going to happen. He's saying about himself. That I'm certain that I'm on the level that no rima vasileya.
Because
he saw that even in a case like this, even in a case like this, where he had no reason to arrest the guy other than he was chutzpahdikim, and we see it still that it worked out that Eberstein didn't allow him to cause an innocent person to be killed. So therefore, you can be certain that all this time, Itaka was, like he said to W. Sherman Kofa, Itaka getting rid of the thorns from the vineyard, and not death. However, nevertheless, though, he still was not completely at ease. First, I need to find out what level I'm at. So, Ashkiur Samadashita, so he had some people give him a drug to put him to sleep. Bailu Labesa Dashisha, because they're going to do an operation. They brought him into a marble, he was fast, as the Gemara will say, yeah. So, yeah. He had them give him something to put him to sleep. Bailu Labesa Dashisha, he had them take him into a marble. Into a marble room. Marble is an operating room, basically. The point is, first of all, marble is smooth, so this way it could be cleaned up easily, but also it's airtight, so therefore no outside air with all the germs that are in it are going to be able to get in. We find in various places in Shas that a base of the shisha was what they used for an operating room. Yeah. Vakara lekreise, and they cut open his stomach. Have a maskimine de kula de tagra. They took out of him baskets full of fat, because as Bentian said, as the Gemara is going to say, which we'll talk about, tagra is fat. As the Gemara will say, we'll learn tomorrow that he was very fat. They're taking out baskets and baskets full of fat. Well, most of the shimshim of Tammuz v'av, they would put him in the sun during Tammuz and Av time to see if it spoils. Well, they masruche, and they didn't spoil. No taka, no worms attacked it. Okay, the question was, shows it is tzaddik. The question is, kol tava nami leitzriach, fine. The fat never spoils. It melts, but it doesn't spoil. The answer is, kol tava leitzriach, suraiki sunki leitzriach. But the red threads in them, like the veins and whatever that's in them, do, because those are those spoil, and those get attacked by worms and whatever. Here, even though there's blood vessels and maybe a little muscle and whatever, nevertheless, it still didn't spoil and it still didn't attack by worms, so therefore it showed that he really was a fat. So now he applied to himself the also, as Zavon HaMelech says in Tehillim, also my flesh will dwell at peace, meaning I'm certain now that I'm on the level that no worms are going to attack my flesh ever, even after I die, because I can see that I'm still on the level of being a tzaddik. Not like Rabbi Shobin Kochel said, Chaymas Ben Yayin, but rather that I'm Takaduri. We'll still see later on, after the Gemara is going to end up digressing, we'll continue tomorrow, but Hashem, the Gemara is going to digress to various other stories and eventually get back to this, that even after all that, Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon accepted many years of Yisurim on himself to make sure to get rid of any lingering possible Averis of his. We'll talk about that tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Not necessarily because of the COVID, just in general. So even though he thought he's a complete tzaddik based on this, nevertheless he's still
was
accepting
he a
Messiah,
or was he not a Messiah?
So according to what we're saying over here, he had rights al pi halacha to do what he was doing. Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha argued with him. So it's machlokas like any other machlokas. The fact of the matter is he kind of volunteered for it by first telling the guy what to do anyway. We're going to see. Fine, but the next case we're going to say over here, the next case, which we'll talk about tomorrow, is Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi was forced into it by the government, and he says, Hamina de Malkuhu. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon didn't use Hamina de Malkuhu, like the original policeman that Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon met. He says, Hamina de Malkuhu. You know what, why don't we learn the next few lines? Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi, Matiki hai maisi biyadei. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi had such a thing happen to him also. He also was appointed by the government to catch these. This is the famous Rabbi Yossi from Shas, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chalakta. This is Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, his son. You had the Tanoim of that generation were all the Talmudim of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir. So a lot of times their sons are mentioned. They're basically the generation of Rebbe. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon we'll see later, and tomorrow we'll see was a contemporary of Rebbe. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is mentioned in a number of places in connection with Rebbe. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi also had such a thing happen to him. So by the way, I mean, if it was during Rebbe's times, it's fairly easy to understand. During Rebbe's times, Antoninus was the caesar over there. The Jews and the Romans are at peace. So like we said before, the Romans are really the legitimate government. You know, there's no question they're not forcing the Jews to do anything against Allah. Okay. Pogabe Eliyahu. So Eliyahu meets up with Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi, Omalei, and he says to him, and he says to him, like Rabbi Shmuel ben Korcha had said to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, and Mosse at the Moser Amishal of Kenu Lahariga, how long are you going to go on massing Jews to the Abish's people to be killed? Omalei, and Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi says to him, my Evan, so what am I supposed to do? Hamina de Malkuhu. I'm under orders from the king. Now you notice Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon did not say that because he sort of volunteered himself for it. But Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi, Utaka was forced into it. Yeah. Amalei, so Eliyahu, now he tells him, fine, Avuch Orak La'asya, your father at one point in his life escaped to Asia, Asia Minor, it's part of Turkey, As Arik L'Ludkia, fine, you can also just as well run away to Ludkia, someplace in Syria. It's fine, it's still part of the empire, but it's not, they'll be quiet over there and they won't bother you over there. So do that rather than continue in this job. Yeah. Okay. All right. So. Whether he did or not, I don't know. History doesn't record that detail, I guess.
He did.
I don't know. If Eliyahu never telling him to, I guess, yeah. Could be.
You cannot do stuff like that.
But again, according to the Ritva, is pointing out, there is justification for it on the Allah. And we're not going to, again, we just pointed out, we just said how Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon found that he still is a complete tzaddik even after all of this. And that even Sveikas Shalem Kach Badori is how much more so. So that there was a valid reason in Halacha for him to do it. It's not, I'll tell you, there's an interesting story in the Yerushalmi that bears on this. The Yerushalmi tells a case like this. It's based on a Mishnah in Truva. Suppose you have a bunch of Jews where Goyim tell them, if you hand over one, you either hand over one of the group to be killed and we'll kill him and the rest of you will be safe, or we're going to kill all of you. What should you do? So the Mishnah says, so the Yerushalmi explains over there, it depends. If the Goyim single out one person, like the story of Sheva ben Bichri in Shmuel Beis, does it mean if they say he's actually liable to be killed for a specific reason, like Sheva ben Bichri was a rebel against David, or do they just mean they singled him out by name but without giving a reason, then you're allowed to. If not, then not. If they're just saying some person without specifying who, then you're not allowed to give over another yid to Goyim. So the Gemara tells a story over there, the Yerushalmi, involving, I think it was Rish Lakish, that one time such a thing happened, and Itaka said, okay, Yichadu Alehem, they're Itaka singling out this person, let's Itaka hand him over. And for the next, I think it was Rish Lakish, I don't remember. Anyway, for the next 3 days, usually Eliyahu Navi would come and appear to him. For the next 3 days, he didn't. When he finally comes back, he asks him, why did you stay away these last 3 days? He said, because of what you did. Haitachin, the halacha is you're allowed to. Eliyahu tells him, the Zumishna Sassidim, he. Is that the way a chosid acts? A chosid has to act within Mishra Sadin. So that might be a similar kind of thing over here. Ni'ikra din, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon can do what he's doing. But for a chassid, or Rabbi Shmuel ben Rav Yossi, but for a chassid, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, Rabbi Yahu Navi are pointing out for a chassid it's not appropriate. A chassid has to hold himself to a higher standard.
So the general, they order to single out some,
yeah.
some heads of communities.
So that's the thing. There it wasn't Yichadu Lahem. There it wasn't. They didn't specify any certain person by name. So they're talking you're not allowed to. There you must you Yimsir Kulam. But yeah. So okay, we'll continue tomorrow about the Shem.
It's a sad topic.
It is. Yeah. It's a necessary topic.